Simen Tov Tzadik Gimel, which deals with the restrictions of the Tzvira period. There's one that we have to understand. It starts off, it tells us that Noyegin Shlo Lisa Isha Ben Pesach La Teres. Ad Lag Ma'im Ben Ben Neisha Ba'usos Man. In this time frame, Meisu Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Now, this is a very difficult notion to understand what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. The Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died in the 2nd century, the era of Rabbi Akiva. In the era of approximating like Bakokhva's revolution, the era of Rabbi Akiva. The Tanoic period will end 100 years later with Rabbeinu HaKadosh in the 3rd century. The period of the Amoraim will continue another 2 to 3 centuries. Although we count the number 2 centuries certainly, until well into the 5th century. And so we have, from the demise of the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva to Chasimas HaShas, Kol HaPoch of 300 years, probably a little bit more than that. And there's not a hint, any place in the Shas, in the Medrash, of a mourning period associated with the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. We first find this in the Gaonic period. 6 centuries after Chasimas HaTalmud. So if we manage to go for almost 1,000 years without mourning the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, what suddenly changed? Now we're mourning the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. I mean, usually as things go, the closer one is to a particular event, the more viscerally it's felt, and the greater the mourning. And sometimes as history goes on, it tends to lapse. You know, for example, in the aftermath of the Chmelnytsky uprisings, 1648 and 1649, Zeras Tach Patat, as we refer to it as. So, in those segments of Europe which were affected by it, they enacted or reenacted a Tainus of Chof Sivan. And in many old, some older calendars, one still will find that Chof Sivan and some Kehillas they faced. This was whatever the day that the pogroms of Chmelnytsky was a significant day in the suffering of the Jews in that era. In today's world, I doubt that there's a single person here that knows someone that observes Chof Sivan. And most of my listeners, if I wouldn't explain it, probably wouldn't even know the significance of Chof Sivan in the first place. Why? Because as we move further and further away from that era, we confronted new and unfortunately sorrowful chapters in Jewish history. They've possessed our consciousness. And particularly that Polish Jewry functionally does not exist anymore, post-Holocaust. And this was certainly principally observed in Polish Jewry. So the Kehillas that observed it and that this was part of their historical memory, no longer exists, it also led to its fading out. And here we have almost 1,000 years goes by, 900 years, 1,000 years, and all of a sudden we're mourning the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. In actuality, what took place is something else. The mourning was enacted because of the travails of that particular era in which they existed. And we're dealing with the events of the Crusades. And those that refer to the Aruch HaShulchan, to the Kinnas, to the various piyutim that were recited in between Pesach and Atzeres are replete with mentions of the travail of European Jewry in the time of the Crusades. And we know even on Tisha B'Av, a number of the kinnas relate to events which took place at this time of the year. They specifically, they mentioned the date and place. The dates are in between Pesach and Shavuos. So this marked a new era in Jewish history, and a very terrible era in Jewish history, because it introduced, for the first time in Jewish history, mass persecution of Jews. In the Roman era, was a question of suppressing a revolution, was a different notion of what took place. But to unleash just mass terror, just to go and randomly just roll across the map and murder anyone that came and fell into your hands, this was something introduced by the Crusades. And unfortunately, it was not the last time that it was to play out in Jewish history. It wasn't the first. It so left its imprint on the Gehillas of that era that they enacted, the Sphere period. This was also, its scope was very large, because it affected most difficulties, take the Chmielevsky uprisings, right? So they affected Jews in the Ukraine, Lithuania, Russia, that area of Europe. They didn't affect Jews in other parts of the European continent. The Crusades swept through basically the entire Jewish world, except the Jews that lived all the way on the other side of Israel in the Middle East. It was the Jews in the Arabian Peninsula that did. But even Sephardic Jews were affected by it, because they went through Greece, they went through Italy, they went through Turkey, they came all the way to Eretz Yisrael. So it was a wake of devastation. So this really collectively touched the greatest segments of Jewry of the time. Now, my assumption is that when they considered why the Rabbeinu Shel Olam does what he does, certainly in the aftermath of the Chazal, certainly not in a position to know. Sometimes even in the aftermath of Nevuah, we're not in a position to know. But Chazal apparently were able to divine still the reasons for the Hashgacha. They talk about the Churban of Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, why they took place. But we are not endowed with an understanding of the divine process. All we can look at is the areas in Jewish life that we feel that we should correct. We're not even necessarily sure that those are the ones that brought about the problem that we faced, but we are honest enough to acknowledge the fact that there are some areas in Jewish life which could stand improvement. And as such, in the aftermath of great difficulties, so we turn our collective attention to the things that need to be corrected. And I think that they felt in their era that what they most needed to correct was to strengthen the aspects of the Beit Adon Chavera. That's my assumption. And because of that, they went all the way back in time. And they said that this era in Jewish history, this is not the first time that when we lacked in Beit Adon Chavera, that this was a time of great devastation for the Jewish people. It happened before in the time of Rabbi Akiva. And they looked at that as a paradigm of what they had experienced. And as such, in the Gaonic period, they enacted this period of mourning. That's what I believe is behind it. Otherwise, I find it inexplicable. The association of the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva with the period of the Sefiras HaYomim. And that's really, I believe, why we have so many different ways of how to mark the Sefiras HaYomim, because we don't really have a source in terms of a Talmudic source which established the parameters of how we're supposed to do this. And as such, when in the absence of some central authority to institute it in a very clear and cohesive fashion, so apparently the Gaonim, we're not even sure exactly that. Did they enact 33 days? Did they enact 34 days of mourning? The Sfaradim and Ashkenazim have been debating this for close to 1,000 years. You know, which nuance is correct? So the general gist we got, that the Gaonim wanted us to mourn at this particular time of the year for 33, 34 days. How, when to start, if you have to be concerned when you start, or you don't have to be concerned when you start, it was left up to each community to enact, this is less than clear. Rav Moshe Zatzal, in his exploration of the various minhagim of Sefiras HaYomim, he divides them, according to Shitas HaGro, into two different types. The minhagim which we commence with the first day of Sefira and proceed all the way until Lag BaOmer or Lama Dalad BaOmer, which is practiced in some Sephardic communities, that's one type of minhag. According to the Gra, the basis of that minhag is that their Messiah was that was the period in which the Talmid and Rabbi Akiva died. The Gemara said, "Mein Pesach La'Taras," it meant from the second day of Pesach until it ceased on the 33rd or the 34th day of the Omer. So this is commemorative in that regard of the exact period in which it took place, according to the Gra's interpretation of the first minhag. All Rav Moshe took all the other varied minhagim of Sefira, and there are many of them, some which we have heard of, some which we haven't heard of. And he said, all of them, we find varied minhagim that they counted 33 days. Almost the most common practice is the practice of the Ramah, which is our practice to the largest extent. We begin from the first day of Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and we stop Shloshes and Me'agbol. That's one counting of 33 days. There are those that started Bezir after the first 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, after the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, and they ran the sphere all the way up until Erev Yom Tov itself, till Erev Yom Tov. There were those that counted the 33 days that kept all the sphere except the days that they wouldn't have said Tachman, and those days they were Maple, and they also came to their Cheshbon of 33. So Rav Moshe says, all of these 33 Minhagim are all one, I'll repeat it. There's no essential halachic difference between them. It's in each local community gave its own nuance and its own twist to it, but it's all 1 minute. Now, how one cannot deviate because of machlekes from the local practice that are communities in Europe which had local practices, but essentially it's all 1 minute. And for a person, let's say, to go from place to place, to switch among them, or even for the community to switch, would not have been anything, any big deal. Because it's all 1 minute. So we see even here how far the differences, divergent the practices are in Sefiras HaYomim. I believe Rav Moshe counted, I think, about 7 different minhagim of how to observe Sefira. Only less than a handful that we are so particularly familiar with. And this comes about because it was no longer at a time when there was a single central force, you know, the Sanhedrin, that could be koveya what Klal Yisrael was going to do, or a Ravina of Ashi to put in the shas that this is what we're going to do. So it took on a lot of spins to it. Now, what did they prohibit during this time, that year? Very few things, in fact. Very few things. Right? The Shulchan Aruch tells us that they didn't get married at this time of the year. That's one thing that they did. The second thing is which is probably the one which is most relevant to us is Noyag and Shalele Histapa. Right? In a society with generally clean shaven people, so not shaving is the most blatant observance of sphere. And what else do we have? And then we have an Easter which is also, even the sources are not, we don't have much. We have one line. And posterity has been left to interpret and apply that one line that we don't involve ourselves in Rikudim and Mechilas. What exactly that means, Rikudim and Mechilas? Does it mean dancing without music, dancing with music, music without dancing? What does it mean? That's also been broadly debated. And we have all types of views about how to look at it. Now, within all of this, which is within all of this, we have the exceptions. La'aris l'kadesh shaperdom, to make arisen, or l'kadesh shaperdom, whether it was the real arisen, I guess, or just a shidduch, we're allowed to do. And that's the reason for that. Shem yikadmenu acha. It's a very interesting notion. Gemara talks about it in Shas, and the Gemara says, "Shema yikadmenu acham v'racham." That in our language, we have in the English language, we have an expression: "Be careful what you wish for; it may come true." Right? And we reflect that in our tefillas as well. Right? We ask the Rabbeinu Shalom, "Malik Mashalos Libeinu L'Toiva." We ask for a lot of things. Not all of them are L'Toiva, are ultimately for our good. We imagine that they are, but they're not necessarily for our good. This is reflected in the Chazal tell us in the beginning of the Bamidbar Rabbah that if the non-Jews in the era of the second bias, even the first, but even the time of the Beis HaMikdash, had paid enough attention, they would have posted armed guards around the Beis HaMikdash to make sure that nobody would destroy it. Why? Because Shlomo HaMelech was mispalo when he built the Beis HaMikdash, that every non-Jew who comes to the Beis HaMikdash and is mispalo, the Rosh Hashanah should grant them that which he requested. That is even more so for Jews. A Jew was not guaranteed that what he asked for at the Mikdash, the Rosh Hashanah would grant them. Shlomo HaMelech asked that a non-Jew that travels to Yerushalayim and comes to the Beis HaMikdash and is mispalo, the Rosh Hashanah should give him whatever he asked. Why? Because otherwise, they'll say, listen, this whole trip to Yerushalayim, what's this religion about? It's meaningless. I went and I bothered and I traveled so far and I prayed. And look, nothing happens. I wasted my time, you know. And I'll try to do one in India next. So Shlomo said, for that reason, the Rosh Hashanah, every non-Jew who comes, his tefillah should be answered. For Klal Yisrael, there was a deeper amuna who won't run away from the Rebbeinu Shalom so quickly. So not everything is for our good. So better that it not be granted. Sometimes a person asks for something, or persists in asking for something enough, that in Shemayim they grant him his wish. But it's not necessarily the favor. So Hashem yikadmenu acha barachamim does not necessarily mean it will be good for the person that did it. It may in fact prove very negative for the person that did it in the long run. But the other person, meanwhile, will have lost that by not apparently doing his ishtadlus, doing what he's supposed to do in appropriate fashion at appropriate time. And therefore the halacha gave special sanction to enter into erusin even in periods in the year when we normally would frown upon it, because Shemmi Yikadmenu Acha, that someone else might precede him. Umutulas is Gamkin Sudas Erison. And in those times when they made an Erison separately, a year before the Nisuan, one could even make the Suda for that as well. V'achshav and presently, Shein v'kachanel v'shat Nisuan, v'gomokum mutulas v'shiduchin v'las v'sudam. One could make a shidduch and make a celebration of that to make a Suda. Avalas v'kudum v'mecholis nogu isa. As I said, what the rikudim of mechayles are is less than clear. Does it only mean with music, or even without music? Or Hashulchan implies it means even without music, because when he talks about it, he goes on to say the Chavetz Chaim and Kol Shekein Shor Rikudim of mechayles Shabbos Shus Bevada Yesh Lizar. One should be careful not to engage in dancing or whatever type, whatever music, dancing for a non-mitzvah, just for dvarashus. And the Aruch HaShulchan answered that B'kol Shekein, when he's talking about Shiduchah, that you shouldn't have Minei Zemer musical instruments. So he seems to learn that Rukudim HaMachayles is dancing even without music. I'm not convinced that that's necessarily the way the whole world learns Pshat. That because many people, in fact, the basis for the Yisrael music comes from that statement of Rikudim U'Mecholos. I think it's only by Kol Shekein. I think some of them take it to mean that you shouldn't have music and dancing. Mecholos referring to the Supim U'Mecholos, right? Mecholos means music. And we find in the Chumash Supim U'Mecholos with drums, right, and musical instruments. Symbol, but it's mecholos means musical instruments. No, mochol it means to dance, but rikud, but mecholos is, I don't think, used in that sense. Mochol it can refer to dancing in a circle, but mecholos I don't think we're here in the, I don't think is used. I don't think we usually find mecholos in that regard in the plural sense. Mochol is a circle in which people dance. Rikudim. You could learn that mecholos means, but again, we're not going to prove what it means, because there's about one line and one rishon that talks about it, and I think the source, as I say, the sources are unusual. In the Tosha Chon Aruch, we find Ibn Shu'ib quoted as one of the major sources on Minhag Yisrael. Now, Ibn Shu'ib was noted more for writing, I think, Perushim on Machshava, on Tanakh, etc., than for any halachas that we have from him. But he is a source that the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah Shulchan Aruch quotes in terms of the Minhagim of Sfira. So what exactly, so, well, we do, there is no, apparently, it's differentiated in the 3 weeks. In the 3 weeks, there's an Easter of Sudas Moraeus in the 3 weeks. There's no Easter of Sudas Moraeus during the time of Sfira Saim. If people just want to get together to eat together because they feel like getting to eat together, there's no restriction in the Talmud sphere. That they did not restrict at all.
They just can't have music, huh?
Music they can't have, right. They can get together.
There's a view out there because there's an acapella music.
The acapella music, we'll talk about acapella. Acapella has a few different manifestations. I think Zora Belsky recently wrote an article about it, and part I agree with and part I disagree with, I have to tell you. The things that he's machmer about, I agree with. But the fact that, in other words, when acapella involves enhanced voices that are digitally enhanced, that could very well, it should very well be considered as if it's instrumental music, is a very strong position. And part of the singing by itself, because singing by itself is never the same as making music with instruments, which is professionally made. Oh, it's a little better, a little worse, whatever. How many times they re-sing a song, even with the music, the professionals, until they get it, you know, all the notes are right. Not so easy to do. So that they did not view as a super simcha, that they necessarily banned it in and of itself. instrumental music is certainly music, and enhanced really has the qualities of music. Now, in principle, one ought to come to the conclusion that if somebody wanted to sit down one night and sing, it's mutter, and that I don't disagree with that, which is also what Rabelski wrote. But one thing I did not see, but in general, to make an industry out of a cappella, you know, recordings, I'm against. Why am I against it? Because a little bit is what the Ramban wrote about Novo versus Atara. It's an attempt, basically, to say, listen, we want to wipe Sphere off the map. So if we can't change the Shulchan Aruch, we'll figure out what type of music that we can claim is not in the Issa. But it's certainly totally inconsistent with what the Minhagim of Sphere were intended to be. If we accept the fact, I was debated. I'm not necessarily, you know, there are historically been more than one position. It was debated if music in and of itself was what they meant to ban during Sphere, or what they meant to ban was dancing, perhaps, or dancing with music. So, like, really celebrating. That's what they intended to ban during Sphere. Now, if we're assuming that most postkin, which has become the generally accepted view, that it is not only that it is music itself which is prohibited, it's not just dancing and celebrating, but music itself is so much considered simcha that that's what they limited during Sphere Ta'imah. Now, what they basically meant to say is this is not a time that you're supposed to be involved in this type of activity. It's a more mournful and somber time of the year. And to wholesale attempt to go around it, I'm not sympathetic to, in all honesty.
Does Rebbe understand what you're talking about, the pizza?
What?
Does Rebbe understand what you're talking about, the pizza and other such products in the market? Or?
No, it's different. Pesach was not meant for what we shouldn't eat. You know, that we shouldn't have. Pesach says we shouldn't eat chametz. If the diet is not different than it is during the year because we're ingenious enough, that's not the problem. That's not the point. Pesach is an Israel eating chametz. We don't eat chametz. That's the kiyum. The kiyum is not eating chametz. The kiyum in Sphira is that it's a somber time of the year. That's the point. The particular things that we don't do are because they are special emphasis on simcha, which at a somber time of the year are inappropriate. It's beyond the question of Isra and Heter. And we find that, for example, in Motzei Tisha B'Av and Siman Tov Kuf Nun Ches, so there's a halacha that we don't eat basar and drink wine on Motzei Tisha B'Av. And the reason is that it is given Mibnei Evloi Shel Yoyim, because that's a minhag, it's not a din. The dinim ended on Motzei Tisha B'Av when the bell rings for Motzei Tisha B'Av. If you had a strong enough constitution, Al-Pidin, you're allowed to go home and drink wine and eat meat. But why don't we do it? It's a very simple thing. But I'll let you know a person sit shiva. I went to the Menachem Olam today. So the people are going to get up tomorrow morning from shiva. Now, forgetting any Issa. So I'll call them up and I'll tell them, listen, I'll pick you up tomorrow. I'm going to take you to a music club. And we'll sit there for the whole day tomorrow. And they'll play non-stop gigs for us. You know, I'm your friend, and I know it's been a hard time. If you want to cheer you up, so I'll bring you to a music club tomorrow, and they'll play whatever type of music. Jewish music, play Jewish music. Non-stop gigs, a really professional band. That's it. 8 hours, non-stop, cheer you up. So what would a person tell me? Listen, it's not the time for it. I'm just in a very somber mood. It's a very difficult time in my life. This is not the time to get up and start jumping around and dancing around. You know, life has, if I was truly an Avelis until now, then I'm not getting up, forget it, I don't need any Easter. I'm not going to get up tomorrow and start dancing. That's what he would tell me. And that's what we say. If we were truly in mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, then we wouldn't be running, let's say, Tisha B'Av to start dancing and celebrating. The aftermath of it is somber enough. And that's really the Nakuta. The Kiyum of Sphira Salimah is the fact that it's a somber period. It's a mournful period. It's been a time of tragedy in Jewish history. And It's not the particular things that we point at are particular things which particularly emphasize simcha that we stay away from for that reason. Because they're inappropriate. He quotes the Lashon of the Torah Shulchan Aruch. Rotzalomar, then why did they restrict chasanas? Vein roi laharbus b'simcha. It's not necessarily the only view. Well, to say, for example, in the 3 weeks we don't get married, not for this reason. There's no masam the milsa, it's just a bad sign.
Was it before the Gaon period, was it in fact a happy time?
He wore it, it may have been. We don't really know.
You didn't get time between Pesach and Shavuot.
It may have been a very happy time in the year before. We don't know, necessarily. I mean, the history of Lag BaOmer is itself strange. We find in earlier times, there are records that indicate that Lag BaOmer was a fast day. Later on in Jewish history, it became a simcha. You know, that's the fast day. I mean, if it's the day of the demise of Shimon bar Yochai, it would make a lot of sense. So yeah, there's a tiny yahrzeit. Now what happens to be that what's been emphasized in later days is of Shimon bar Yochai made a statement in the Zohar, however we ought to take it, that basically imploring his Talmidim not to be sad on the day that he died, but rather to take it as something a very special and unique day. And that's a little bit, you know, some have claimed as the basis, you know. As, I mean, for example, according to the Minhagim, which end the day the death of the Talmid Rabbi Akiva died, so the fact that we don't have mourning on Lag BaOmer, we understand. But the Ramah even tells us that Now, why are we marvin tzah simcha? That's peculiar. Just because the Talmid Rabbi Akiva stopped dying is not a reason we should start being marvin b'simcha. Okay, the avelus might end, but to be marvin b'simcha, that's strange.
They all died.
What?
I thought the people that they stopped dying because they all died.
Whatever it is, maybe they all died, maybe some survived, whatever it is. It's just post-oil's volume was post-cum milomus. I don't know what happened. I can't tell you. But it's just that day they died, stopped dying. So whatever it was, whatever the simcha of it was, I can't tell you. But who remained, I don't know. But whatever it is. But also a young person. But what simcha? That's the day of simcha.
They stopped dying.
So listen.
Why is that simcha?
Listen.
The day the Midbar, Tuba.
That's the Simcha was something else. There is a Simcha, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Simcha on Tuba of was, according to that view of the Gemara, the Tainus, because they stopped dying earlier than they had expected. The Rabbi Shalem sort of rescinded the last part of the Gezerah. That was the Simcha. But I'll ask you a very simple question. It's a shocking question. I don't like to ask it, but we'll put it into context. The war in Europe ended, what, May 16th, 1945, something like that. May 8th. Thank you. Okay. I stand corrected. May 8th. Baruch Hashem, would we say May 9th is the day that I beat Marv B'Simcha?
No.
When we took into stock what would happen, this was no time for Simcha. Yeah. So, it's peculiar. Now, Ramesh even points out something else. According to the Minhagim, that's, for example, the second minute, that starts on Rosh Chodesh year, and some randomly took 33 days.
What are you doing, Lag BaOmer?
So what's Lag BaOmer about altogether? Well, what's this interruption with Lag BaOmer? So he says, according to that, you will certainly have to say that Lag BaOmer is because the celebration of the Hilulah of the Yahrzeit of Rosh Shimon and Yahrzeit. So there are two spins in a Yahrzeit. On one, it's, we find in the Shas indicates that the Yom Shur, basically, of the Ima was a day of a Tainus. And then there's a statement of Rabbi Shimon Yochai and the Zohar that his Talmidim should take it in a happier note. But apparently he's going from one sphere, just because of his tzidkis or whatever, he will rise from one sphere to the next in Gan Eden at that time. And a mail to Yom Simcha. So, this too, you know, exactly what Lag BaOmer is, we're not even sure of that. Now, the when, what Lag BaOmer allows one to do is also debated. Can one get married, for example, Lag BaOmer is on Friday this year, can one get married Thursday night? Or not?
You can't
shave Thursday night? We'll see. Halacha, you're right, but it's not so simple. There happen to be, as in everything in Jewish life, there are three views on this subject. Two is not enough. The Chofetz Chaim quotes the Elyon Rabbo, who was no fan of getting married on the night of Lag BaOmer in any year. The Rav Moshe Zatzal wrote in his Tshuvas that undoubtedly it's mutter to get married on the night of Lag BaOmer. He says all the Elyon Rabbo says Lo Ra'isi Noyeg, and he didn't see people get married. He says to be also during Sfira, it's not enough Lo Ra'isi Noyeg. We need to know positively that Chasson is also, otherwise it shouldn't be mutter. I know Rav Yochanan Tomanetsky Zatzal was asked about it, and he said the minhag in the Gehilas in Europe was to allow chasanas on the night preceding Lag BaOmer. I guess so, because it was a Dvar Mitzvah. For the sake of the Dvar Mitzvah, they were more liberal. Now, is hair cutting mutter on this night? So here we have three different views. Chofetz Chaim quotes two. He quotes some that allow Mibo Erev, the Yayiv, it's allowed, that Lag BaOmer at night, that one is allowed to take a haircut and a shave. And he does not really pask in that way. V'yesh machonim shamakilu listapim riba erev. There are those that allow hair cutting at night. Ramah said that one should not take adlag ba'atma v'lobim ba'erev and not the night preceding. So the Chofetz Chaim says the ones that didn't allow it, according to the Lefisa Lidu, in Lohoka Belayla Shalafonav, from the Nisbar Dwayra Shalafonav, Eino Ibram Tachna. And this should follow as the Ramah. But he says, since he found that there are a number of Achonim who allowed it on the night time, so he quoted it in the Mishnah Berurah. Onim Nati Lohavida, meaning that is a basis to be Simech on it if necessary. So some allowed even hair cutting at night. The normative practice is not to allow it. And it's a surprising view in the Berhetev. The Berhetev writes, those that don't say Tachdana, which we don't, on Erev Lag BaOmer, who are in the middle of the stopper, the Hobaho Talia. So the Berhetev even has a view that you're allowed to shave Lag Lamed Beis in the afternoon. You're allowed to shave and take a haircut. There's even such a day. Now, the Yaivitz wanted to put his pshat into the Ramah. So the Yaivitz said, when the Ramah said that one should not be mistaper at Lag BaOmer, v'lo mibo erev, the Ramah didn't mean the night of Lag BaOmer as opposed to the day. The Ramah meant that you shouldn't be makel on erev Lag BaOmer, only when you got to Lag BaOmer, the night of Lag BaOmer itself. Meaning, since there's even a sfar, there is a sfar to be makel on erev, since you don't say tachman. It's sort of like Erev Shabbos, Erev Tachatzayis, Erev Yontif, the Simcha's beginning already. So he ought to be Meikol, and the Rehetev is Meikol. So the Ramah came to tell us not to conduct ourselves with that. That was the point of the Ramah. So in fact, there are three different days. There are some Yechidim that are Noyeg, that Lamed Beis in the afternoon. They take haircuts and they shave. It's rather unusual, not normative by any means, but there are those that do it. Even on this question, we have three different minhagim. Now, switching between the different minhagim of Sfira. Can I switch between different minhagim of Sfira? What's the dip? We'll get to that. But are you allowed to stop? Can I switch? We're not talking about who has to switch here and who may want this. Can I switch them in a gosir? So Ramayisha says the following, that it depends. that if we're dealing within the varied versions of what we call the second minute, that one could switch in between them. But between the first minute and the second minute, one should not really switch. Why? Based on the sheet of the Grah, that the Grah says that the reason for the first is the first minhag holds that that's when the Talmid and Rabbi Akiva died. So according to the Grah, one should not, the two different types of minhagim, one should not switch in between. So however, according to the Bach interprets the first minhag as no different than any of the other minhagim. That is 33 days of mourning, except they took the first 33 days. Lav v'dafkana, those historically were the 33 days in which the Talmid and Rabbi Akiva died. You had to take 33 days, so there's some yekis, reason, demon, okay, we'll roll out our sleeves and get it done, you know. Now we'll take the first 33. Now what are we putting it off on? Yeah. I agree. That's the reason that I have, for many years, kept the first minute for that reason.
So this is not a family thing. You can decide, I don't like my father's minute, I'm going to do my own.
Well, so that's the question. So Moshe, in terms of switching between what we call the second and the first, was... So we said, according to the Grah, one shouldn't. According to the Bach, it's permissible. And overall, he's generally quite lenient, because he says, in Hoge Sfira, we should be Mekel and a Machlekes. So basically, one has the right to follow with the Bach. We would say, if one didn't have a very big need, then maybe, you know, one shouldn't do it, you know. Perhaps, to be Yotze Choladeus. But in essence, Rav Moshe basically says that one has, in Minhagim sphere, one has the right to follow the Bach and to be making the switching between the Minhagim. So, now who has to switch? This is an important question. And he spends a lot of time in his tshuva, Kuf Lama tests in the first Chelek. I'm not that Kuf Lama tests, so this is something else. In the first chelik on Aruch Chaim, he deals at length with the issues of sphere. Now basically he wanted to write in a place where people came from all over the world, and we have every type of minhag in sphere, then it's Siman Kuf Nun Tes in the first chelik Aruch Chaim in the Igros. That what should be the common practice. So he spends a great deal of time interpreting the tshuva of the Chassam Sofer. Did the Chassam Sofer actually mean, which is one, the simplest reading of it perhaps, that if I went to a chasana, because I was invited to a chasana the week after Pesach, that I should keep the second minhag this year? Or perhaps I shouldn't go to a chasana, because I'm going to keep the second minhag, I shouldn't go to a chasana at that time. So he spends a great deal of time investigating and being mafalko on the pshat in that tshuva. And basically he comes out that the Chassam Sofer also did not mean that if I as a yochid went someplace to a chasana after Pesach that I have to keep the second minute because of that. You do not have to. Promotion. You do not have to keep. You don't have to change your minute for that reason. To observe a minute other than the one that you know, just because I went to a chasana this year.
Even though the chasana has music and everything.
Even though, well, why? Because basically he said, the balei simcha, if that's not their sphere, they have a right to make a simcha. There's an Indian to be mesameach, a chasana kal, it's a mitzvah. For mokum that mitzvah, they did not stand in the way. He proves even that in fact, the Shulchan Aruch writes, that in times when there were very strong kehilas, if a person took a haircut during Sfira, he used to give him a knas, a fine of some type, some censure. But if a person got married during the May Sfira, even though he wasn't supposed to, but ein manishu, in ancient Iso, they did not censure him, at least they did not punish him in any way. So Rav Moshe says, if he wouldn't be allowed to conduct the Sheva Brachos, that would be a pretty big einish. So it would seem, in fact, that they allowed him to conduct the Sheva Brachos too. Why? Because once he got married, there's a mitzvah to be mesameach. Everybody else in town is keeping aveilus. There's still a mitzvah. The mitzvah is doichad es aveilus. So that's his basic view. That I can go to a wedding because I have to be mesameach chassan and kallah.
But an oval generally can't go to a wedding.
It's a real oval. This is not a real oval. This is what we call avivas yishomer.
But one other thing is, if you are the one making your child's wedding, then you have to change.
But l'chayra, what comes out, that a person doesn't have the right to make the chassanah unless he's not keeping sfirah. That I can't. I'm not allowed to get married during sfirah. So I should not be able to make the chassanah during sfirah either. So that's why I married, Baruch Hashem, two of my children got married in the week after Pesach. So the years that my children got married, I kept a second minute in those years in my family.
Yeah, where did this minute come from? I remember growing up, no wedding. During Nisan. And then suddenly now,
in Nisan?
I remember
that. In Nisan, it depends. I don't know. If you were lived in a place where they kept the first minute, then they would have no chasanas. But normatively, I mean, Ramosha wrote, and that's quite clear in the Ramah, that in the week if you keep the second minute, in the week after Pesach, it's absolutely mutter to make weddings. Ramosha was not so happy making weddings from Lag BaOmer and on, because since the minhag of Ashkenazim was more for the second minhag than the first, he was not so happy making chasanas. And even there, he wrote, though, if it's a shasach chagodol, one could be simach on whatever on a bach, who would be allowed to make a chasana at that time. But he was not so sanguine about it.
That's what we know. That's what
most people know. What happened, though, the problem is getting more difficult, and particularly if you're not chassidish. Why? Because the chassidim are very long engagements, the real chassidim. So 9 months to a year is normal for them to have an engagement. Chos and Kala don't see each other that entire period. So they get engaged and they go and they book a hall already. For next June. Now we're up to May, they'll book a hall for January, for February next year. In our communities, the boy and girl didn't even meet yet to go out yet. Then they went out, then they got married, and they want to get married in 3 months. But at that time, what's left? We have to steer around all the long-term engagements to find a date. And it's particularly at those times during the year where there's the end of Sphira, etc., the week before Shavuos, etc., where there's heavy, use, where people want to are right before the 3 weeks. Where it tends to get very busy, it's getting harder and harder to find the hole for those nights. I mean, that pressure is pushing people to get married in the latter after Lag BaOmer, the latter part of the year for that reason. They're just having difficulty finding at the beginning of Sivan a hole that's open. That's where it's coming from now.
Yes, sir. Sorry. If you move to a place where they keep a certain Morocco to keep one way, in Morocco to keep another way,
if you come to a place where there's a clear cut minhag ha'makom, you must have to keep the sfirah that way. That you have to do. The point is, in our New York, we have minhagim of every society in the world. I mean, the history has not created a more cosmopolitan place than the city of New York.
Good question. So, regarding halacha, you said that if you make a chasana in the week after Pesach, then that year at least you have to keep the second minute. Who does that apply to beside the chasana kallah? Parents, cousins?
The mishpacha, the direct mishpacha. The
parents, brothers, sisters?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Not close cousins?
No, they are nothing. They're not the brothers, sisters.
Parents and siblings?
Yes. Now, one thing I would want to add, Lid IT. Music, halachically, is a central part of a chasana, part of the mitzvah being b'sameach. In our day and age, and that's the reason that even though I'm keeping sfirah, but since the mitzvah being b'sameach, the chasana and kala, I can go and dance and participate even though there is music. No. In our day and age, bar mitzvahs have assumed the proportions of chasanas. But al pidin, music really has no place. Halachically, not that there's an Easter, but it has no place in a bar mitzvah. It's not part of a bar mitzvah. To the extent we even find that, the music says according to the Shach, that an oval is allowed after Shloshim, that the Rodeb Yiddish could go to a bar mitzvah. It's a party which really doesn't have much simcha to it. It's not a big bash. And he allowed, based on a shot, he allowed an oval after Shloshim to participate in a bar mitzvah. There was no music. And consequently, I'm less than sanguine about making bar mitzvahs in between Pesach and Shavuos with music for that reason. Why? Because by and large, the guest list is from people from all different minhagim. And since there's no mitzvah to be misameach, so really there's not a real appropriate reason that they should be dancing and listening to music at that time. It's quite different than a chasana. So I greatly discourage people.